Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Everybody counted us out from the beginning of the season to mid-season. But we're still here.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's get out to Ed Werder. He is in Atlanta after covering the Super Bowl for Westwood One Sports. Ed, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Ed.
I think that's a question at this point I'm best not asked.
You get it.
So do we look at this and say that it was as boring a Super Bowl as ever, or do we say, well, we learned that defense still matters, or do we say, man, that Sean McVay was outcoached? I believe he said that.
I think we can say all of those things. I'm going to go with that was the worst Super Bowl I've ever covered. The Rams, I mean, you have this season where it's the second highest scoring season in the history of the NFL, and we get a game where not only are there no points scored, but there were virtually not even any scoring opportunities. The Rams didn't run any plays in the red zone, and the Patriots ran one. That was the fewest we've ever seen in a Super Bowl. The previous low was 5 red zone plays. So by far, this was the dullest Super Bowl in the history of the game.
So post-game, Ed, your duties with Westwood One, wow, took you into the Rams locker room.
Yeah.
And Sean McVay, you described, said, I think he said it himself, he was numb. What was that like? And I know you've done this a long time, probably talked to other losing coaches. How would you compare his reaction to others?
Well, as you probably know from experience, when this happens, and especially when it happens the way it did in such a shocking, you know, way, I mean, the Rams are the second highest scoring team in football this year. They led the league in scoring last year, and they have this historically futile game offensively. And you walk in the locker room and the season's over, it is absolutely, without question, the quietest place in the world. That being said, Sean McVay did come out of his office and talk to us for probably 3 or 4 minutes, answered 3 questions. He did say he was dumb. He said, I don't know how you ever get over this. He also took full responsibility for the poor offensive performance, saying that he didn't call plays that gave the Rams a chance to win the game. And that's very magnanimous of him, because while they did play poorly, and a lot of it is his responsibility, they simply were outfought and outplayed and outcoached by Bill Belichick, as so many opponents in the Super Bowl have been. As for how this compares, I thought it was, to me, the greatest performance by a losing head coach under those circumstances since I interviewed Pete Carroll in the locker room after Seattle threw the pick on the 1 yard line to lose to the Patriots in Arizona. I remember that locker room being similarly quiet, and players like Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas were, you know, the Legion of Boom, heads hung, uniforms still on half an hour after the game, as you stood there and there was no movement of any kind in the Patriots locker room except for Pete Carroll going around from person to person, player to player, whispering in their ear, patting them on the back, and then he walks over to me and goes, "Hey, Ed, did you want to interview me about that?" about throwing the ball instead of giving it to Marshawn Lynch to decide a Super Bowl from
That's
the 1 yard
else.
Line. Let's do that.
Yeah,
it was. You know, as much as people are saying, "Well, it was a close game and there was great defense and all that," and you got to appreciate defense, I believe the Rams had 9 penalties, 4 pre-snap penalties. I just can't get past that one. And is that confusion? Is that why? How do you have pre-snap penalties in a Super Bowl?
Well, first of all, the Rams were operating under duress because they were in a stadium that's supposed to be a neutral site game, But the reality is there were very few Rams fans there, as you would expect, because there are very few Rams fans anywhere.
Right.
And they certainly didn't come all the way across the country to watch the Super Bowl in great numbers like the Patriots fans do, which I think at this point Patriots fans just pretty much budget this into the family's, you know, yearly expenses, the Super Bowl trip. and anyway, so I think one of the things that the Rams have really benefited from, you know, I've talked about Sean McVay and his genius as a play caller. Well, one of the things that he has done throughout the course of the season that it seems almost nobody else takes advantage of is he virtually calls the game for Jared Goff from the sideline. He uses the equipment, the communications equipment in the quarterback's helmet. So what they do is they go to the huddle quickly. They go to the line of scrimmage. They try to force the defense then to declare what they're going to play because they don't know when the ball is going to be snapped. And all of this happens before Goff and the communication device from the sideline in his helmet goes off. Well, what the Patriots did was they waited for that 15 seconds to happen, and if the ball wasn't snapped, they made an adjustment that left Goff to compete against a defense he didn't expect, that McVay didn't, with a play that McVay called for him for a different look. And I don't think that they ever resolved that issue. And that's one of the things, I think, that prompted McVay to take as much responsibility for what happened as he did.
And Ed, it looked so familiar to a lot of people in Chicago that you wondered how much of the Bears' game plan or the success that they had against Jared Goff and McVay at Soldier Field back in December was copied. And that, no, obviously, Bill Belichick can come up with his own schemes to win Super Bowl, but you wonder how much of that he either borrowed or saw and it reinforced in his head, okay, this is the way that you can beat this young quarterback. This is the way to confuse him.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And I think a lot of, when I've talked to defensive coordinators about the Rams and how you defend them, they all take the same approach. They all say, this is not a great drop back passing team. This is a team that's a play action passing team. And so they have to have the threat of the run. And if they don't have that, then their offensive line can be overwhelmed as it was in the Chicago game. But the team that Belichick mentioned after the game, whose film he had watched and whose tactics he had duplicated to some degree in this game, was Detroit. The Lions obviously are coached by Matt Patricia. Mm-hmm. Matt Patricia, a year ago at this time, was the Patriots defensive coordinator. Well, so they got a very good look at the Rams offense matched up against what the Patriots play, because it's very similar to what New England plays. Not only that, Belichick clearly would have complete and full access to any information that Matt Patricia had about that game as far as how they evaluated the players, what they prioritized, what they would have done differently. And so I think they duplicated a lot of that game plan. You know, they put double coverage on Robert Woods. They had their best corner, Stephon Gilmore, who I think should have been the MVP, on Brandon Cooks. And then they just mixed up coverages, and that really limited the run game and the play-action passing game, and they were able to put consistent pressure on Jared Goff. And he repeatedly failed when under pressure in that game last night.
What does that mean for other young the Bears? What does that mean for teams that are trying to copy the Bears? Trying to copy the plan of McVay and Mitchell Trubisky, for instance.
Well, I don't know. I think it, in retrospect now, I think that McVay would, you know, come up with a different plan. But if you look at what happened to them, I mean, they didn't have any explosive plays until the very end of the game. They were unable to drive the ball consistently because they couldn't win on third down. They were 3-for-13. And I mentioned the similarity in the game plans between what the Lions and Matt Patricia did and what Bill Belichick and the Patriots did last night. Jared Goff against the Patriots was 19-for-38 with 229 yards. And against the Lions, he had almost identical numbers, 17-for-33, 207 yards. So I think the bigger mystery, guys, in all this is what happened to Todd Gurley in the last month of the season? How did he go from week 16 when they sat him down, maybe the best running back and the most versatile running back in football, to to what we've seen the last 2 weeks is the two biggest games of his career.
You got to wonder about the knee. I mean, it just no other explanation really makes sense, but they insist that it's not. I know the injury reports, but still, you look at that, and just it's got to be physically related, doesn't it?
Well, it better be. If I'm the Rams, I want it to be related to something physical, because if it's not that, then it's something they can't fix, and it's going to produce a worse long-term outcome for the Rams. And you know, the 10th pick in the draft, the guy they've got a lot invested in, the guy they built their offense around, I mean – he's barely touched the ball, and he was totally ineffective in the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. I mean, his totals are 14 for 45 with a touchdown rushing the ball in the two games and two catches for 2 yards. And on the sideline, you know, we've all, okay, how much are they going to use Todd Gurley in this game? Is it going to be an even split with C.J. Anderson? So I'm standing on the sideline, and I'm watching C.J. Anderson through the first two series of the games. And he's sitting there on a Gatorade cooler in full recline with a towel over his head and a stocking cap on top of that. And it made it pretty clear to me that they intended to really establish Todd Gurley in this game, and they didn't.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that is one of the great mysteries, because that guy's a good player and he could do so many different things. I guess he's got to be hurt. I know he wasn't on the injury report, but there's clearly something wrong with the knee. Otherwise, they'd have featured him. And they said they wanted to. So that's really bizarre.
And, you know, this is the second game in a row where one of the smartest, most innovative offensive coaches in football is standing there after the game, after an NFC Championship game to get to a Super Bowl, and after a Super Bowl in which you're trying to win a world title, and he's saying, "That's my fault. I didn't do enough to get him involved in the game." That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Not at all.
It's easy to get the ball to Todd Gurley, because you can throw it to him or hand it to him on any play you want.
So, Ed, you know, you look around the league, and this has been the year of offense, obviously, with the rules changes, with the new young quarterbacks coming in, the influx of talent. And yet, you know, here they are, the Patriots. And even outside of Chicago, because I think Chicago looks at this and is encouraged if you're a Bears fan. But 154 rushing yards, you know, you have 29 of the 60 plays the Rams ran had zero or fewer yards, three points. Is this going to be is there any effect of this in a copycat league? Are there going to be GMs that look at their roster and say, okay, we need to do this better. We need to maybe buck the trends and go back to playing smash mouth old time football?
Well, I think we've seen a couple of teams that have tried to do that with, you know, some degree of success, and they did make the playoffs, but they were, you know, quickly eliminated. The Seattle Seahawks have certainly tried to take that approach where they've emphasized playing great defense and running the football, and then, you know, get enough magic out of the quarterback at Russell Wilson whenever necessary. And the Dallas Cowboys, who eliminated them, have taken that same approach because they've built their entire team around a running back and Ezekiel Elliott that they took with the fourth pick of the draft and three first-round picks in the offensive line. And they eliminated Seattle, but then they got eliminated by the Rams in a game where they looked like the Rams did last night. So, no, I really don't think it's going to – I think people will look at this as an aberration, you know, something that was the result of the genius of Belichick and his defensive coaching staff and their players, and that's still the way to go in the NFL with the rules being what they are, is to throw the football as often as possible, to build your team around your quarterback and your passing game, and to be aggressive at all times. I still think that's the direction offense is headed in the NFL, and I don't think this game will cause anybody to change their approach in that regard.
Ed, when we look at the result of that game and we talk about how we remembered one play run in the red zone, one play after a 29-yard pass, a diving catch, I think, what was it, five is the fewest in any Super Bowl?
Yeah,
I mean, it was
five. Crazy
that you had one touchdown in that game, and it came in the fourth quarter. And, you know, this is, again, when we talk about it, will it go down as one of the great performances? Will it go down as just New England doing their thing? Will it go down as the worst Super Bowl?
I think we'll remember it like, wow, this was a game that was like one played, you know, 40 years ago, Minnesota and Kansas City, you know, or something like that. It was just, I don't know where this game came from. I mean, both teams were like 3 for 12, 3 for 13 on third down, so nobody could sustain anything. And at one point, I think Jared Goff started 5 for 15, and the Rams had more, you know, Johnny Hecker punts than they had Jared Goff completion. Maybe they should have let, you know, Hecker throw the football more. I mean, he's been a very effective passer. Why they should have put their punter in the game at quarterback. I think that would have been,
maybe,
you know,
so
changed things up.
But it said everything when the punter has as many touches as your running back in the fourth quarter. You know, that's not a good
thing. And you know what else is amazing to me is they got the MVP wrong. So you're voting for offensive players that they just instinctively, in this game dominated by defense where there was almost no offense whatsoever, the MVP of the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history is an offensive player who didn't even score the only touchdown of the game.
Yeah, I think you got that right.
Who would you give it to? Gilmore,
Hightower? I'd give it to Stephon Gilmore. I mean, he's a defensive back, and he had a sack, a forced fumble, and an interception that essentially clinched the game.
That's a good night.
That is pretty good.
Ed, thanks for all your great work down there.
Absolutely fantastic. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been great to be with you guys every day. I really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to maybe doing it again sometime.
Good
stuff. Yes, definitely. Thank you so much, Ed. That's Ed Werder in Atlanta, Westwood One Sports.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.